Hey, thanks, Kane. 807 FM Talk 106.5. On the way, Quentin Hillier checks in. Heads up, ceasefire tech movement taking over the region because the Southeast and Mid-South can't compete for the technology jobs of the future without the proper resources or training. So ceasefire is investing in the education, infrastructure, and people to make the Southeast and Mid-South number one in technology. Only 10% of our high schools teach AP computer science, so ceasefire is teaming up with schools and public partners to give teachers the training and resources they need to teach it in their classrooms. Also set up coding programs and competitions to give students the opportunity to pursue careers they never thought possible. And because high-speed internet and technology is the foundation for economic development, CSpire is on a mission to deliver managed information technology services to more businesses in our region. Futures out there, and the CSpire tech movement is leading the way. Join the movement at cspire.com/tech movement. All right, y'all say hello to Quinn Hillier from quinnhillier.com. Also, just Google him and you'll see he is prolific in his editorials out there and his writing, and also the author, speaking of prolific, of the Mad Jones trilogy. Y'all say hello to Quinn Hillier. Hey, Quinn.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good morning, Quinn. Just got you on this morning really to talk about refereeing and championship games.
That's a sore subject.
Let's all go root for the Saints this weekend in the Super Bowl, okay?
So, I mean, is it other than the Boston Metro or a little area of the Northeast, is everybody else in the country rooting for the Rams?
No, because the Rams don't deserve to be there. So there's nobody to root
for. But they're kind of a surrogate, right? The closest thing for the Saints.
Bah humbug. There is no surrogate for the Saints. You're either Saints or sinners.
Are you going to boycott the game on Sunday?
Darn right I am.
How do you think I feel about a coin toss, Quinn? We're in the same boat, friend.
And then, of course, there's the phantom roughing the passer call when your sleeve gets dirty and you gently rub it against the quarterback's chest and they call... roughing the passer. That's what they called on Kansas City for. They dared to touch His Highness, Tom Brady.
I know. I have no words.
Outrageous.
All right. So let's get to something a lot less contentious, and that is the mainstream media's treatment of Christians in the latest news cycle.
Christians and conservatives in general, but especially Christians. We're talking a whole series of really, really badly done stories following, by the way, the BuzzFeed wrong story about the Mueller investigation that even Mueller shot them down for. But that one bias against Christians, it was just crazy bias against Trump. You start with Karen Pence, the vice president's wife, and they went after her for daring to teach at a Christian school. And they said it, they made it out as if it was anti-homosexual, when actually their rules frown on sex outside of marriage for anybody, including, quite specifically, heterosexual. So how is it, anti-gay to say that nobody, including heterosexuals, should have sex outside of marriage?
It's about omission versus commission sometimes, right? Somebody reports a headline, reports a story, they pick one part out without giving it in context, and then people just grab that and go, well, that means this.
Yeah, well, yes, except that outlet after outlet reported the same thing. They went on it for about 3 or 4 days, and of course they're going after somebody who, even though her husband is vice president, she's a private citizen, and she's going back to teaching, which is what she does. So they go after the wife to get at the husband, and they go after her for daring to teach at a Christian school. That's number one. Example number four, which we will circle back to, also involved going after the wife to get at the husband. In this case, it was going after Virginia Thomas to hit Clarence Thomas, her husband, the Supreme Court Justice. We'll get to that in a minute, but of course, in between them, there was the Covington Catholic High School kids, where I think y'all talked about that a lot last week, where it turned out that story was about 180 degrees different from what it had originally been reported. But see, actually, we did talk about this last weekend, because if you're Christian and go to a private school, you know, and are seen as any way, shape, or form privileged, then you by very nature are assumed to be snotty and nasty and wrong. So those kids were mistreated. Then over the weekend, and I went off on this yesterday, please Google this, my piece on the New York Times treatment of Virginia Thomas. She met with Trump late last week, and the New York Times reported on it. And it might be the single most openly biased, supposedly straight news story I've ever seen. Within two sentences, it was describing her and the people that she brought, the other conservative activists, as hard right activists. Later, it described her and her people as fringe elements, hard right, fringe. It several times used the word unethical or synonyms to describe her. Not a single nice word about her in the entire piece. And again, all of these judgment words that were coming from the reporters themselves. Now, journalism 101 in a straight news piece, you don't use judgment adjectives to describe somebody in politics. If somebody, you know, if you quote somebody else saying that, that's a good quote. But you don't make the snap judgment on who is hard right, who is ultra conservative, who is a fringe element. But they did. They went there. And my challenge to them is somebody should do a study. Take, say, 6 months of New York Times pieces and find out how many times they use hard, ultra, fringe, or extreme to describe conservatives. And then find, and then do the exact same thing, how many times they use hard, ultra, fringe, or extreme to describe liberals. And the liberals, it'll probably be 0 or 1, and the conservatives, it'll probably be about 1,275. I mean, it's unbelievable, the level of bias, and it's sickening.
Quinn, I'm unfamiliar with this story yet. I'm sure I'll be more familiar after I read your piece, but what exactly was Virginia Thomas? Do you know what she was meeting with Trump about? What brought this on from the New York Times?
Well, she is the coordinator of an invitation-only gathering every week of leaders of various outside conservative groups, and they meet and they strategize. And she had been trying for a year to bring several of them in to meet with Trump because they didn't think that that Trump was hiring some of the people that they thought should be hired to implement conservative policy, among other things. And so they went in there and had a meeting with Trump and several of his aides. And the New York Times was outraged because they said the wife of a Supreme Court justice shouldn't be meeting on politics with the president, even though, of course, the wives of former Democratic Senate leaders have, you know, been open lobbyists for time, but that apparently wasn't allowed. But if you're a conservative, it's horrible. So anyway, that was what it was about, and they took the occasion to say how crazy these people were, how unethical it was for Virginia Thomas to be meeting with Trump on politics, and it sneered, it openly sneered at them for having prayer several times during the meetings. And I'm told by a participant there who is not Virginia Thomas, who called me not knowing that I was, you know, that I was going to hit the New York Times for bias. This participant called and said at least four things that they reported are just factually wrong about what actually happened. So on top of the bias, they did not reach out to anybody in the group that she brought. The New York Times said Virginia Thomas did not respond to an email asking for comment. It didn't say anything else about reaching out to any of the other people since they couldn't reach Jenny Thomas. And they apparently didn't reach out to anybody else to get their version. So what they had is a few disgruntled non-conservative White House aides smearing these people on background, not by name, and they went with it.
Hey, Quinn, can you hold on during the news break? All right, coming right back, more with Quinn Hillier. Talk about a couple different things here on his list, and also talk some shutdown and shutdown reprieve with him when we return right here on Mobile Mornings. All right, 821 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. That's good. We had it confirmed during the break that it would be a Drew Brees face tattoo that Quinn Hillier would get, right?
No, that was not what I said. That was not. I don't put guys' faces on my back.
You don't have a choice.
Face, I wouldn't want it on my back because I'd want to see it. So I don't want, you know, Kelly's face on my back because I don't want it on my back. I want to see it.
All right. So, but in this case, you don't get a choice. You have to get the face tattoo on your back.
Well, if somebody holds a gun to my head and says I have to have a face tattoo on my back, or else I die, I say, give me a fleur-de-lis because that's the face of God. So there you go.
Cop out.
Ooh, he told that line.
Who that? No thanks.
Cop out. All right. Move along here. I want to talk about this three-week reprieve we have now with the shutdown. So, and now the, as Kelly reported this morning, State of the Union a week delayed, a 12-minute phone call between President Trump and Speaker Pelosi. Wonder what that was like to invite him to do the State of the Union at the House. But we're back on, Quinn, for till Valentine's Day, ostensibly. What do you think happens here? Do you think there's any leverage for the president, and can he get something done?
No. Legislatively, I think he's, by caving, he's shown the Democrats that they have nothing to lose, and so they're not going to budge at all, even though I think they should, but I don't think they're going to budge at all. So then the question is, does he do it as a so-called emergency? And I've got a column out saying that that would be a complete and utter misuse of presidential power. This is something, if it's done, it should be done legislatively. But you know, I'm consistent against too much authority in anyone hands, especially any president.
That's one of the discussions here, idealistic discussions I've had with people on this, is no matter who's in the White House, when you have the expansion of the beachhead of executive power, that sticks around. It is not the next president who's going to say, well, I'm going to pull back from that. It's just that establishes a new territory, and then we got to deal with, a question about a co-equal branch of government when one starts to take on jobs that maybe belong to other parts of government.
Well, exactly, and this is not having anything to do with Trump, and it doesn't have to do with my position on the wall. I support the wall, although I don't think it's as important as people think, but I support the wall. So I do want the Democrats to cave on the wall, but even though I want the wall, I don't think it should go up via executive a spurious declaration of presidential emergency powers for exactly the reasons you give. There is a real danger in giving too much power to one person. This nation was founded by people who distrusted extreme executive powers and wanted to especially get rid of a king. So I don't know. I think it's very worrisome.
It passes on. I mean, it should be just a discussion of, this is, like you said, what the founders wanted in our system, but to give it examples that sometimes help people understand, wherever your politics are, let's say somebody is in office who is contrary to your politics and whatever your issue is, something comes up, and they then use the declaration of an emergency to change laws or push something through.
I'll give you a perfect example. President Truman, in 1947, I believe it was, or no, maybe it was later, maybe it was at the beginning of the Korean War. But anyway, President Truman declared an emergency to nationalize, was it the steel industry or the, anyway, he nationalized, I'm forgetting which major industry, and said it was part of his emergency powers. And it was a scary moment because, you know, that basically meant if he wanted to, he could take over any industry. And they took him to court, and the Supreme Court shot him down, rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Supreme Court would shoot down, although there's argument on this, I think the Supreme Court would shoot down Trump on this. Even if they don't, I think it's against the spirit of the Constitution and our system, and I would not support it.
All right, and to wrap up here, even though we have focused more on his tattoo, Roger Stone, part of course, the news cycle, big time since last week, and you mentioned this, you sent an email to me about the ridiculous riot gear pre-dawn raid by the FBI on Roger Stone. You said it was excessive and unnecessary.
Completely excessive and unnecessary. Look, again, this is me arguing against my political interests. I have detested Roger Stone since 1986. So I should be happy to see Roger Stone arrested. But this is the wrong way to go about it. You don't need 29 people in riot gear with semi-automatic guns drawn, bursting down, basically, you know, saying open the door and going in and immediately putting the big guns in somebody's face. That's dangerous. It's wrong. I've been writing about it in case after case for at least 10 years.
I mean, but this is not the first time. I don't know how many weapons and how many officers, but it was a pre-dawn raid on Manafort as well.
It was, and I think I said on the show that that was the one thing in the whole Mueller investigation that I have not, or that I knew that I did disapprove of. The difference there was they didn't have CNN cameras, so we couldn't see it ourselves. But again, I mean, you'd go back. I wrote a piece in like 2010 called Ninja Bureaucrats on the Loose about armed federal agents acting like tough guys when they didn't need to do it. And it's a dangerous thing. People die. Their dogs get shot. People have been killed by mistakes with these SWAT team tactics, and I'm against them. If it's a drug lord, yeah. But if it's some white-collar criminal that's not likely to pull a gun and try to shoot his way out, all you need is four people with pistols in their holster saying, come with us, sir. That's all you need.
Ninja bureaucrats on the loose. I'm
Googling
look
it up. Washington Times.
Great, great headline. All right. With that being said, then Roger Stone goes on. Hannity says, "You know, nothing to see here. I got nothing to report."
I don't know. I mean, you know, he could be guilty of sin. Frankly, I hope he's guilty of sin because I think, I mean, he's a nasty, nasty character. He's been polluting our politics for decades and decades. He brags about being a dirty trickster. I hope he's guilty. But again, whether he's guilty or not, he did not deserve, and our system does not deserve, the FBI treating him like he is a drug lord. People could get hurt.
There we go. Quinn, if people want to read more about what you're writing or discuss the intricacies of bad refereeing in the NFL, where do they go?
Oh, my goodness. mostly these days, just Google Quinn Hillier Washington Examiner, but also QuinnHillier.com aggregates everything and highlights some of the best. So please do that, and please order my books, Mad Jones Heretic, Mad Jones Hero, Mad Jones Agonistes, on Amazon.
Quinn, as always, we appreciate it. We'll check back next week.
Thank you.
All right, Quinn Hill, you're checking in. And see this text from Bob here? Says, back to our, if you had to get the face tattoo, he stepped it up. He said, Sean, I'd like a tattoo of Kay Ivey in a basketball uniform jumping up for an alley-oop. With this saying underneath, ain't no step too high for a high step.
Oh, man, that's strong.
He must have quite the back.
Bob, you've got, number one, there's going to be a lot there. And number two, for the text there, please tell me you're going to do it in an old English font.
Yes.
We got to.
Are we talking Air Jordan style here from the free throw line?
That's right. So.
What about D. Brown a la Pump the Pump?
Pump the Pump.
Yeah, remember the Reebok pumps?
Oh, yes.
Remember he made the pump famous?
Sure, Reebok pumps. For you youngsters, it was a mistake at our time when we thought, oh, they got self-lacing shoes now, but there was a time when we thought we needed to pump up our shoes.
I was going to say that's when the Supersonics were actually in the league.
It's true. Coming right back. All right, 836 FM Talk 106.5. And I don't know the regulations on that. I have to check with the city. Can you throw snakes? I don't think you can throw snakes in a jar for Mardi Gras. Because glass,
right.
You know, it'd have
glass,
to be
yeah.
A snake in a plastic, like Tupper. Could you throw snakes in Tupperware?
They will hunt you down. I remember we went to one of the we went to a Mardi Gras parade. Someone threw a frozen juicy juice type pack.
Oh, that hurts them out.
I know, and it exploded. And it was blue, and it got on so many different people. We were on a balcony.
Good times.
Yeah.
Why not just throw a roll of quarters if you're going to throw that?
That's going to cost money.
Yeah. At least if you get the hit there, you got some money. You know.
I'm sure they were tracked down, though. That's all I'm saying.
There's, by the way, a continuing conversation going on the text line of all the different back tattoos. In the situation presented, we presented on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5, but we had responses on our Facebook page, on the text line. If you had to get a back tattoo, you don't have a choice. You can't just say, I'm not getting one. You have to get a back tattoo of somebody's face, a la Roger Stone's face tattoo of Dixon. Who would it be? Rita says the Lorax. Some great ones here. Yeah, we got in a side discussion of if somebody had back hair, you know, Chewbacca. You could get the Chewbacca and then let grow in. And
that's smart. Very smart.
That's our dog's middle name.
Chewbacca.
You've met him. You know.
I know Chewbacca.
Chewbacca.
Your dogs have multiple names.
Some of these, I mean,
their official name, their nickname.
They're Southerners, so they've got added middle
names.
Yes,
they have fancy names.
I'm just loving some of these tattoo responses. I'm seeing Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That'd be a pretty good one. Mo. I mean, we've seen variations of all three Stooges.
Right.
That people have said that they would get tattoos of, and I'm sticking with my favorite Dalton from Roadhouse. That might be one that I have to add to my back.
I started off with Bob Ross, although Burt Reynolds as the Bandit.
That's a good one. And side note, Bob Ross, I think one of those tattoos that you tweeted out, if you ever get a tattoo that you absolutely hate, that you need to get covered up, you could do worse than having Bob Ross painting over your tattoo to
Ooh,
fix that problem.
That's genius.
That is brilliant. All right, I want to roll out a story, and we'll put this on Twitter in just a second, and hopefully you can read it. Wall Street Journal has one of those paywalls, but I think you can read, like, a story in a month without paying. I think it is. So when I tweet this out, I understand that you may get paywalled, but hopefully you won't. Story from Joe Craven McGinty over at WallStreetJournal.com, WSJ.com. This is about the price of the wall. And I'm going to give deference here to Brendan Kirby. You see a lot of stories out today going, what it cost for the shutdown is more than what President Trump was asking for the wall. Brendan did that story 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember him talking about it on Midday.
So let's give credit where credit is due. That was Brendan Kirby way before all the other news groups. But this story, a little bit different from Joe Craven McGinty. She says, consider only the $5.7 billion price tag, the latest amount President Trump has sought to pay for the wall, leading to a stalemate with congressional Democrats and an unprecedented government shutdown, which ended on Friday with a deal to reopen. Is that amount a little bit or a lot? Because starts off saying, she says, set aside for a moment the debate about whether the U.S. should build a wall along the southwest border. So now we're just getting to the money of this, and now got my attention. In some respects, the amount is tiny. The $5.7 billion price tag is 0.03% of the U.S. gross domestic product, which amounted to $20.66 trillion in December. It is 0.13% of this year's projected $4.5 trillion in federal spending. Mm. It is 0.13% of this year's $4.5 trillion in federal spending.
Holy cow.
This tells me two things. Number one, what a small percentage of the wall funding would be. Number two, holy cow, we've got to get ourselves under control in this country. It is, here's the breakdown. I like these so I can understand it. She goes on to say, it's $17 your share, $17 for each person living in the United States, or if you only want to count taxpayers, it's about $40 each. an amount that you'd find in many of our wallets. But if you prorate it by the 304,000 undocumented immigrants who were apprehended at the border in fiscal 2017, it's about $18,750 per person. In other words, if you have them pay for it. Or if you measure it against the 99,035 immigrants who requested asylum in fiscal 2018, it amounts for $57,555 for each one, approximately the starting salary of a Border Patrol agent. Putting a dollar figure at the center of the debate helps crystallize what is at stake, the bottom line, and people and different people who will arrive at different conclusions. Is it worth it? To put it in perspective, experts who study the federal budget suggested a few comparisons. All right, so here's a compare and contrast. The Olmstead Lock and Dam project on the Ohio River between Illinois and Kentucky, one of the nation's most expensive civil works when it opened last year, cost $3 billion. Okay, so that's less than the Walmart. That's a big lock and dam project. One World Trade Center, the priciest office building in the world when it opened in 2014, cost $3.8 billion. Mm. A proposed rail tunnel connecting New York and New Jersey is estimated at $12.7 billion. And the Obama administration pledged to pay half of that. The Fed's paying half. $12.7 billion for a rail tunnel connecting New York and New Jersey, $12.7 billion. Mm-hmm. It goes on here. It said the Food and Drug Administration is pretty close to this, said Mark Harkins, senior fellow at Government Affairs Institute in Georgetown, at Georgetown University. For fiscal year 2019, the total appropriated and collected in fees is $5.568 billion. Funding the legislative branch of the U.S. government costs $4.8 billion annually. The diplomatic programs, including all United States embassies, cost $5.94 billion. Public housing operations cost $4.76 billion. And National Park Service cost $3.2 billion, just over half the amount requested for the border wall. The hope for wall money is equal to about a quarter of the cost to run the Treasury Department. She loved the irony in that. To run the Treasury Department, Office of Management and Budget, OMB, and the National Security Agency, and all other White House agencies. It's about 100 times the cost of staffing the White House for the year. Went on to talk to Patrick Newton, a spokesperson for the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, independent nonpartisan organization based in Washington, D.C. Said research and related activities for the National Science Foundation cost $6.5 billion in the last fiscal year. The Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, SNAP, costs $6 billion annually, and the School Improvement Programs cost $5.1 billion annually. Now, this is all federal spending. Visitors, because, you know, it's in a lot of states, there's state money and federal money. Visitors, she gives some links here to where, and I'll give you the story, where you can go look at the breakdown. Said, but Andrew Elliott, the author of Is That a Big Number, got beyond government spending by looking at the cost of a few luxuries that some of us might dream about. The wall requested money is 12.5 times the cost of the most expensive painting ever purchased, which is Da Vinci's Salvatore Mundi, which sold in November for $450 million. It's 18 times the cost of a Walt Disney blockbuster movie like Avengers Infinity War. And the amount that was asked for, $5.7 billion for the wall, is estimated to be about 1/20th of the wealth of Jeff Bezos.
Golly, that really puts it into perspective.
So Bezos, his personal wealth.
That's before the divorce goes through.
Before the divorce. The wall funding would be about 1/20th. Of what he's worth.
And you've been saying this since the debate between Pelosi and Trump really caught fire over the last few months. I guess it's been longer than that. But with her regaining her seat in the House, that's when it's really caught on. And it's all about messaging from either side.
Not about money.
It's not about the money. I start thinking with the Super Bowl coming up in Atlanta, and they've got that really nice new stadium built not too long ago. And the debate always comes up whenever a new stadium is built in a state, how much the taxpayers pay for football stadiums.
Yes.
Arlington, Texas, that humongous Jerry Dome there in Arlington, the cost of that was $1.2 billion. Taxpayers in Texas paid $444 million for a football stadium. The one in Atlanta, taxpayers only paying $200 million for that.
Such a deal.
$1.5 billion stadium. But the one going up in Nevada, taxpayers are paying $750 million for a football stadium.
So there you go.
And some of the meantime, the Senate Intelligence Committee is hearing right now from the heads of U.S. intelligence agencies about the security threats facing the country.
There
That's
you go.
Happening right now.
Hey, they're back to work at least for 3 weeks in Washington. 8:46. We're coming right back. Make that New Year's resolution to get cleaned up around the house, get organized, get the stuff out of your way in the hallways, get rid of the junk room and actually return it to the guest room status that it used to have. You haven't gotten with it? Hey, by the way, February is this week. So let's get stepping here on your New Year's resolution. Bring in the pros, and that is my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He and the crew will come to your house. You'll have identified the junk, and voila. They will make it go away. That junk could be up the creaky attic, you know, ladder, stair, spring-loaded thing, or it could be just sitting there in the foyer. Wherever you got the junk, you need it gone, they'll pick it up. Maybe it's a storage unit. Maybe it's your office. Maybe it's a house you got to get ready to sell. You got junk, big stuff, you don't know how you're going to move it. They do. They know how to move it. They got the truck to move it and get rid of it. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Check them out online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
It just cracks you up. I mean, they do such a good job as a business. They come, they take care of whatever you need them to take away.
Wintertime is like the hardest time for me to do the show because about four times a day I'm going to go.
Well, maybe it's getting you choked up because they had to sign that NDA to not tell everybody what it is they had to
what junk
store.
They're removing.
That's non-disclosure agreement.
You know, and Trey also got, I won't even tell you what it was, but he got into the back tattoo conversation as well. He texted
no
us
way.
This morning. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
What did he say?
No, I can't tell you.
So
I'll tell you during the break. All right.
You know, speaking of non-disclosures, today Cliff Sims' book, Room of Vipers, is that what it's called? Something like that. His first 500 days in the White House. It comes out today, and President Trump now tweeting about Cliff Sims, who founded Yellowhammer News here in Alabama. He says, a low-level staffer that I hardly knew named Cliff Sims wrote yet another boring book based on made-up stories and fiction. He pretended to be an insider when, in fact, he was nothing more than a gopher. He signed a non-disclosure agreement. He is a mess.
And I have texted Cliff again to try to confirm the time he's going to be on the show with us coming up. Yeah, he's talking about, you know, how it went down that he was using Kellyanne Conway's computer and saw these messages where he says she was texting or, I think, or DMing, or messaging somehow members of the press and bad-mouthing everybody in the administration. She was putting on the face there on TV that, you know, she's a big supporter of everybody and then dogging them out privately.
Like six people at one time she was conversing about.
A group dog out.
Well, that's what happens when your widgets and digits are connected. You know, you've got your phone connected to your computer, and if you loan your computer out, someone is seeing what you're saying.
So and we're going to get Cliff on we're going to get him on sometime soon to talk more about this. It's going to be something.
And that goes right into what our national news partners are reporting about today about FaceTime and iPhone.
Oh, yeah. So tell everybody if they didn't catch that story.
Well, what's happening is let's say someone tries to FaceTime you, and you're like, I don't think I want to answer it. Your microphone is open. So they're able to hear conversations and eavesdrop.
And they said they can use a camera, too, to look at you.
Wow. It should be disabled by about now, don't you think?
Yeah, they said disable your FaceTime. They're going to have an update coming up to fix it, I guess, until the next person figures out how to crack it.
That's
if you worry about the camera, I got a high-tech fix.
Yeah, put a piece of tape over it.
That's right, high-tech.
You know what? And that's like that same black tape you use for the VCR. Remember when you get tired of trying to set the clock?
12 o'clock?
Yeah,
yes.
That's easy.
All right, let's go to the phones at 343-0106, and John in Mobile's up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys.
Good morning.
I don't mind if I change the subject, but...
it's not going to stop you, but yeah. Yes. Yes, I saw this.
The police officers use the Ferguson riots or whatever as the time when really the war on cops started and Barack Obama was president. And I think it would go a long way if he came out and made some kind of statement in support of the police. He has been really quiet since Ferguson on backing the police. And I've told y'all before, I've got a son who's a police officer in Grove Hill now. So I'm real aware of what's going on. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there.
What was the full story on Houston, Kelly? Did we get? I mean, I know you were talking
five
about the
police officers
the
were shot.
Yeah,
I'd have to find that tweet. But I mean, it was. I believe the youngest was 33, the oldest was 50. They all survived. One was shot in the face. This was in Houston yesterday. You know, your heart just drops when you hear about what these men and women face every single day.
Yeah, I mean, as we're dealing with it here at home, it's a national issue, and unbelievable. I mean, it just one is unbelievable.
Right.
And John, thanks for the call. But one is unbelievable. But the five part,
and they were trying to serve a warrant.
Mm-hmm. A house they thought they were selling drugs. I think.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, well, they were serving a warrant to where they thought a house where drugs were being sold from that house, and that's where the officers were shot when it was right around 5 p.m. yesterday when they breached the home.
And the governor there issued a statement saying this evening's horrific attack on police officers is a solemn reminder of the service and sacrifice our brave men and women in law enforcement make every day to keep us safe. The city of Houston and the Houston Police Department will have whatever state resources they need to bring swift justice to those involved.
Before we run out of time, too, is double back on this and say I'm not surprised, but I am so honored. Y'all turned out so big for the Back the Blue Telethon yesterday. Big thank you to our news partners at WKRG for inviting me over yesterday during the midday news and answering phones and taking your calls and taking donations. And yesterday, $35,875 pledged for the Officer Sean Tudor Memorial Fund. 100% of those donations yesterday are going to that memorial fund. Of course, Officer Tudor was shot and killed in the line of duty, and it is a big number there. And thank you. Two things happened. Friday, the turnout of people showing love along the funeral procession was beyond touching. And then to see people, write that check, give that credit card number, and donate that money. $35,875 raised yesterday, and that telethon ran from 6 to 7 p.m., 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. yesterday. More things are coming up. We've got, of course, this weekend coming, a pancake breakfast at Ed's Shed, at Seafood Shed. Now, I know you don't, like I said to Tom and Panini and all those guys, I said, wait a second. At Ed's doing breakfast? They said, yeah, they're normally not open. At that time, they're opening up. They're doing a pancake breakfast. All that money donated. Do we have a link on the Facebook page?
Yeah, we've got the, it's linked still to the top of our Facebook page, a list of the running fundraisers. I know this Thursday, the Remembering a Hero Sean Tudor Benefit and Fundraiser, they're having that at Cedar Street Social Club. $5 cover at the door, live entertainment and raffles going on throughout the night. All of those proceeds going directly to the family. You mentioned the pancake breakfast February 2nd. That's from 8:30 until 11. $10 a plate. All proceeds, again, go to Officer Tudor's family. And then two more we have listed there on Saturday, February 9th, so a week from this Saturday. This will be out on Airport Boulevard out in West Mobile. Food, a car show, jumping houses for kids, music, and then food. $10 a plate. All those proceeds will go to Officer Tudor's family. And then at Azalea Manor on Sunday, February 10th from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m., another event with food, music, and an auction, and all proceeds again go in there. And all those links are on our Facebook page.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add, and for those who can't make it out on this side of the bay, there's also events happening on the other side of the bay. And if you can't do that, the police department has a link. If you're concerned about making sure that money gets to where it's supposed to go, go to the Facebook page of the Mobile Police Department, follow the prompts, and then you can give.
All right, and I'm just going to tease this one coming up because I'm waiting for that man to talk more about it. You like going fishing, you like getting in a raffle, and you like helping out law enforcement, I'll give you that hint of what's coming your way very soon. We'll unveil more on that.
I'd have a blue marlin on my bag.
There you go.